Welcome to What's Ailing America with your host, Dr. Rebecca Carlin, the world's only court-qualified expert in vaccine-induced diseases. Dr. Rebecca Carlin.
Namaste, and welcome back to another edition of What's Ailing America. The views expressed on this broadcast are not endorsed by VBS Radio, its staff or management, and represent the views and opinions of the host, guests, and callers. Additionally, the information I share with you is not to be construed as medical advice. Rather, I am merely teaching you what I would do if I were you, after much research on each subject. To learn about my work explaining and reversing vaccine-induced disease syndromes, please go to www.drcarley.com, that's drcarley.com, and listen to the interview of myself by the Chiropractic Leadership Alliance to learn how I went from being a surgeon to a court-qualified expert in vaccine-induced diseases, and how the medical mafia has responded to my stepping out of the box. I do consults for people with autoimmune diseases and cancer to teach people how to reverse these problems with natural therapies. I have clients all over the world and do everything based on your history alone. I don't need to see you in person. Please call me at the number on my website if you would like to learn how I do consults. I ask you to consider the information I give using your own God-given common sense detector and discern the truth for yourself. I would love to answer your questions, so feel free to call in toll-free. The number is 877-270-8714. It is fine if you use only your first name, and all shows are archived. Every week I will answer the question, "What is ailing America?" with a different response, as well as share the good news of what can heal America on many levels. My goal is to assist in the evolution of consciousness on this planet. For awareness of the truth shall set us free. And I know that once enough of us have become aware that inoculations are the true weapons of mass destruction, together we will be able to stop this holocaust on the people and the pets. And we have to take responsibility for our lives and live in a sacred way. And you must check things out for yourself, folks, and if you don't stand up for the truth, you will fall for any lies. On tonight's show, the answer to the question, what's ailing America, is going to be disease caused in animals by inoculation. And I am so happy to have on the show tonight a veterinarian who I have such respect for. She's basically my sister in the animal world, Dr. Patricia Monahan Jordan. Her alphabets are DVM. I know that that's Doctor of Veterinary Medicine, CVA, CTCVH, and Herbology. So I welcome you to the show, Dr. Jordan, and if you could start out by telling us what those other two alphabets stand for, since I'm sure a lot of our listeners aren't aware either.
Okay. The CVA is Certified Veterinary Acupuncturist, and I also am certified in traditional Chinese veterinary medicine and herbology, and actually also in Tuina. And those are all through the Qi Institute down at Redick, Florida, under Dr. Shea. And these are advanced degrees in traditional Chinese veterinary medicine that I obtained after I had my Doctor of Veterinary Medicine earned at North Carolina State University in 1986.
Well, I'm so impressed with your credentials. And if you could just tell us, what do you feel is the situation with vaccines in animals?
Well, I think it's terrible because I don't believe that a lot of the veterinarians that are graduated when I've been out for 20 years, and I don't believe that when we went through school we were ever really given any kind of factual information or any information actually other than what came through from the marketers of the vaccines to open our eyes to the fact that there was never any chronic or long-term studies done with the effects of these vaccinations, or for that matter, what any of the inoculated individual materials like the adjuvants or the chemicals, the preservatives, any of the other toxins that were in there, would actually have on the body, whether it was human body or in the animal body. So I feel very betrayed by the training that we received, that it didn't give us a complete look, and even if it couldn't have been complete, at least an accurate look at what was happening, because it didn't come across to us that actually the most dangerous medical procedure that we would be doing on a daily basis would be that of administering by inoculation a vaccine into the animal. And I feel that most of the diseases that we see today, actually it's almost like job security or self-perpetuating problem. The vaccinations have led to our sickest animals, and in relation, it's like we are making our own business. I think you said it the best when you said internal medicine seems to be the study of vaccine-induced disease, and that's what we're seeing in the animals.
Yes, go ahead.
It's just very sad.
Well, I think it's evil. I mean, because once you realize, and you have been sending me so many wonderful research papers, at least the veterinarians in some institutions are doing some research into this, and you see that there's so much proof over the years, including, I have so many papers in front of me, there was a book mentioned in one of the articles that you sent me going back to 1884 in England, where a homeopathist wrote a book about reversing vaccinosis with homeopathic remedies.
Right.
So this has been around forever, and people have to realize that everything that Dr. Jordan is saying is true for people as well. And I liken the pediatricians to, you know, the veterinarians that you just spoke of. They're doing the same thing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of them. I've been trying to forward you some of the emails that have been sent to me on the different. I mean, I have training besides the traditional Chinese veterinary medicine. I also went through Dr. Richard Pitcairn's class in veterinary homeopathy, the professional course, and also spinal manipulation, which is a chiropractic class at the Healing Oasis in Wisconsin. So I have studied a lot of these different modalities, animal Reiki, flower essences, just homotoxicology, pulse diagnosis, just every different aspect to realize that we were getting these dead ends in Western medicine and conventional medicine. There had to be an answer out there that actually had to do with really true healing. And it's just really hard to get past the obstacle to healing, which I found in the animals, they don't have the same one that people have with, like in their heads, not getting better. What their obstacle to cure was the fact that they were genetically being transmutated by the intensive overuse of the vaccines.
Exactly. And this information is so important because, of course, in many cases, when people develop these different problems, the first thing they always want to do is tell them it's in their head. As a matter of fact, autism is listed as a psychiatric disease. And just like you said, the pets don't know about placebos. You know, I've actually heard that argument made by someone that they were having a debate on homeopathy in England, and the white coat was trying to say that in many cases, you know, the people were only cured with homeopathy because they believed in it. Well, the pets don't believe it. They don't even know what they're getting. So the pets, of course, are our guidelines to exactly what's going on, and especially because they have such a short lifespan in comparison to people, their systems obviously age at a much faster rate, and I think that that's one of the reasons why you're seeing the diseases manifest so fast after the inoculations in the pets. Do you agree with that?
Yes, and then the other factor, that even if we were getting too many vaccines as people, I don't know anybody that does the terrible intensive vaccination. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous, and I consider it malpractice to have a veterinarian giving intensively every single year the vaccinations that are multivalent and for modified life. And, I mean, it's ridiculous. A lot of these animals don't even go outside or, like, are very limited apartment animals, and for them to be getting, you know, 13 antigens every year, and Then you also multiply the factor that they're not living as long. Like you said, we have a age chart where it's not exactly 7-to-1, but I know for cats, as they age, every year is equal to like 4 years in people years. So you're seeing not only their generations, you may see 30 generations of animals over the time course of where you would see one person's generation go. Does that make any sense?
Yes, it does. And so from what I've learned from you, isn't it true that they're basically supposed to be recommending these inoculations? You had written something about the three-year core vaccines.
Yeah, I can speak a little bit about that. There is no rules, and that's I still even speak to clients today. They have it in their heads, and I'm not sure if they've been told this. I'm terribly suspicious that office personnel are allowed to infer that this, like the Stemper Parvo shot, has to be given every year. That was never true. Where that originated from was the fact that when the USDA first had the labeling done for the vaccinations or biological therapeutics, which is what vaccines are considered, that they only made them, the companies that made produce these vaccines prove that they could last for 1 year. And that's why they never did the studies to see whether they would last longer. And they're just now being done like that. But what I'm really upset about is the fact that people like Dr. Ron Schultz have proved, and it's been in our major textbooks that we use in school as far back as 1992, that these vaccines would last for 7 to 10 years. And so why were we giving them every year? I talked to Dr. Cuselli from Vermont by phone, I guess 2 days ago. He had it stated in one of his papers on his online newsletter about where cancer was coming from, the statement that it was in 1989 that the AVMA started recommending that pets be vaccinated every year. And I called him to personally chase down that because I'm trying to put my finger on when did this ever start. It's like when I went through school, they never made any kind of big emphasis on, you didn't even know to ask those questions as a student, and you just picked up from what they were telling you and carried that out when you graduated to do. But anyway, he said, essentially, there was never any scientific proof whatsoever. There was never any scientific papers. There was never any footnotes or anything that you could go back to and use as a standard for why they were ever every year, but that it came out of roundtable discussions through the AVMA, and it was essentially just somebody's opinion. And I feel like now it was a very, very irresponsible opinion because nobody was looking at what the long-term chronic effects were going to do. Nobody even really has a clue exactly how they were working. And vaccinology is different from immunology, and we did not receive any vaccinology training in veterinary school. So the people that have gone forth and said, oh, we have to vaccinate every year, I mean, it's really ridiculous when you sit back and think about it. Their bodies are not much different from humans, and why would we ever think that they needed to be inoculated every single year? Once any being, a dog, cat, horse, or person, is vaccinated against a virus, there's just about, if it's a good vaccine, that they just about have immunity for life.
Well, I'll just, I have to kindly disagree with that statement, good vaccine. To my mind, those two words don't go together, but I just want to mention, and if you go to my website, folks, and read my paper, my response to the CDC, on page 2, I actually have a quote in there from the 6th edition of Harrison's Principles of Internal Medicine, where they said, rarely is prevention of infection per se considered to be an important goal of vaccination. In fact, asymptomatic infection after vaccination can serve to enhance and prolong the immune response. So what they're doing is giving you the disease. The disease stays in the body, and I describe the mechanism why that happens, how the immune system's corrupted when these viruses are injected instead of sneezed on the cat or dog or ingested orally or whatever the case may be. The corruption of the immune system causes it to remain there forever. They cannot push these viruses out. And it's really amazing to me, like you said, for them to keep inoculating every year. I mean, basically, they're destroying the immune system of the animal. And in many cases, they can't mount an immune response. Their body is so busy trying to fight the viruses that have already been injected into them, which are going to stay in them for life. So I totally agree with everything you're saying. The medical doctors do not get any training in vaccinology either. And it's quite obvious to me why that is, because just like you said for the pet vaccines, it's the same for the human vaccines. No vaccine given to children has ever been studied to see if it causes cancer, because they know it causes cancer. No vaccine has ever been proved safe or effective. Yes, sometimes it produces an antibody response, but as you've shown me in so many of these articles that you've sent me by different researchers doing studies in pets, especially this amazing article from Purdue University in Indiana, actually did a study and they published it about vaccine-induced autoimmunity in the dog. So this stuff is coming out in the veterinary literature, but I wonder if it's being covered in the veterinary classes. I highly doubt it, because just like you talked about those roundtable discussions that they're having, I'm sure there's probably a couple of manufacturers of vaccines sitting in on those roundtables. Wouldn't you think so?
Yeah, I think that the problem is that we have corruption. We have it in there. In the veterinary school, I know it was happening now. I didn't see it when I went through, but just like the foods that were given to the veterinary school and our clinical nutrition book came from that same company, the students come through and see all of this free product and think it's the gold standard, and they carry it right out. I mean, they have no idea who oversees the entire workings of the veterinary school, whether or not they took those products in. And they see that same name connected to when they have continuing education meetings. They supply the free food and the open bar, and they give kickback programs for them when they order their products and then sell them in the veterinary hospital. So in a way, it's a lot like what happens in the human hospital for the conflict, I would say, conflicts by whose material you're reading. When I first got out of veterinary school, you know, the drug salesmen that came by, they were the ones that put the articles, and there wasn't any other research to read. So, I mean, what do you think? You know, it's like they're not going to sponsor research that don't come out to say to their benefit. And I feel like that happened with nutrition in veterinary school, and it happened with vaccines. The vaccine company, Fort Dodge, I am understanding from the area representative, still, even to this day, supply free vaccines to several of the teaching hospitals in this area. And the veterinary teaching hospital, the students come through, they see that, and they think that this is what's supposed to be done. So there's a lot of different ways for Big Pharma to push their agenda. And if there's nobody overseeing the veterinary program in the school to teach the students any different, then this is what they come out being brainwashed into believing is the way to go.
Exactly. And what you just mentioned about the food is so important with this whole scandal now that it seems to be taking over all of the animal feeds. I mean, not just dogs and cats, but horses, pigs, chickens. It seems like they've been feeding this poison to every animal. And, of course, I've read many articles where they say they're not even going to take those food animals off the market because they just believe that it's not going to cause a problem. But it's amazing to me that these pets aren't even just dropping more like flies, because it was that situation especially which makes everybody realize you're buying all these different brands of pet food. You're buying Iams and you believe that that's a better brand, and then you find out they're all buying the same garbage from different companies and just mixing it up together in their own little formula.
Charging three times as much.
Yes. And between the poison food they're eating and all the vaccinations they're getting, it's amazing that the animals aren't even dropping more like flies. But, of course, they have their steroids to give to the animals, and sometimes they can suppress their autoimmunity for some time. And then, of course, that shuts down the immune system totally. So I just wanted to ask you, have you found in your experience that the most loyal veterinary clients actually have the sickest pets?
Yes, I do. And I also said that in an interview on the Dr. Dumore video. And it just sort of slid out of my mouth when I realized that that's what the case was. And it's very sad because I feel like the veterinary profession has been entrusted with a type of it's almost, I don't even know what to compare it to. It's like being a pediatrician. You're entrusted with care of a, something that can't speak up for itself. And if you don't think that there are people that would not believe it if they saw a video of these procedures when they're known not to be the right thing for the animal being done with a blind eye for the almighty dollar by the very vet that they think and encompass so closely as a relationship of trust that they wouldn't have anything but the highest regards for their pet. I point out every single day we have at least six animals presenting that should not be vaccinated because they are not healthy or they have a vaccine-induced disease already, and yet, you know, it's up to the individual doctor. I will tell them right straight to their face I wouldn't do my pet. I wouldn't recommend them doing their pet. And the reasons why, nobody, once they're explained and they have full disclosure about the vaccine, choose to have it. And yet I see this fleeting, well, I don't understand, why wasn't I told this before? And that's when I don't have any answers for them, because really if they're either very ignorant to what's going on or else they're very knowledgeable and are doing it for money.
Exactly. It's all about following the money. And
right.
My pets are like children to me. I have two cats and a puppy, and I'm just outraged at what the veterinarians are doing. But like I said, at least there's more veterinarians stepping forward and making comments such as what you're making and telling the truth, basically. And I understand there's already a group of Maine veterinarians that are getting together, and they're demanding informed consent and things of that nature.
Yeah, it wasn't. They're not Maine veterinarians. They were actually clients whose animals were harmed. They all have posters out there of their own pets that developed cancer after a rabies vaccination or had some kind of an issue. But the Chris Christine group up there, and I backed her and tried to supply her with every information I can to help support her efforts. There are some veterinarians, including Dr. Jean Dodds and Dr. Ron Schultz, that have helped in their efforts when that issue came up in New York where they were trying to pass a rule that they get vaccinated every single year to be boarded. There are veterinarians working along with them, but they actually ran into resistance in Maine trying to get that bill passed. And the resistance, I really think, comes with a large portion of ignorance within the veterinary community about what they're actually doing. And I guess this is what makes me passionately upset, is that they don't regard the most important thing they're doing every day, the most dangerous procedure, medical procedure, is actually the vaccine. And because they don't understand about what's actually going on, they don't read the papers, they're not presented with the evidence of what's actually happening, what they're actually doing, what they're actually causing, the cause and effect that's happening with the, for instance, Gene Dodd's work with the most of the hyperthyroid and hypothyroid cases that we see are autoimmune diseases as a result of over-vaccination. Unless they read that Purdue study, they don't have any clue that most of the breakdown of our animals and our ACL injuries and the patella problems and all the skeletal malformations, the breakdown, the degeneration of the myelin, that it's all traceable back to autoimmune problems caused by overuse of vaccination. And that if you look at most of the breed diseases, that you could even very well make a strong case for the fact that those transmutations causing those very breed specific diseases are coming from an overuse of the vaccinations. Now, I know that's not the only thing. We do have awful, what I consider landfill foods that are sold through Sam's and Walmart and the grocery food stores. You read that book, Foods Pets Die For, and you'll get a little inkling about what's going on with the actual pet food industry. There is no regulation over it. There are no rules to follow. They can say whatever they want to. They can say 3 out of 4 vets recommend it when there might not be one vet that recommends it. Or if there is, he might be paid to. Or, you know, the commercials that are on there. But the food and the vaccination, over-vaccination, Dr. Pitcairn said for 30 years he's been on his soapbox that those two things in particular are the leading cause of our illness in our companion animal pets today.
Well, I could not agree with you more, and I think one of the other problems with the veterinarians who refuse to open their eyes, just like is also true with the medical community, besides the money factor, there's that ego. You know, they can't believe that they're so intelligent and that they could have been lied to. It's really a very hard thing to go through. I know that you went through a similar process as I did. When you start to open your eyes and you realize the Holocaust, and myself, when I was a surgeon, when I was working in the emergency room, if a trauma patient came in, I would, you know, if the nurse was busy, I would get the tetanus shot and stick it right in them. I didn't even think twice about it. That's what I was taught to do. I believed I was doing the right thing. And I just a lot of times wonder how many people were maimed or paralyzed or maybe even died because of a shot that I gave them, just like you said, thinking that this is nothing. I mean, it's almost like, you know, a very minor thing we think of, you know, okay, do the shot and then whatever else, and here come to find out that it is so dangerous. And they just don't want to open their eyes because it's such a horror to realize that you've been lied to about everything.
Yes, and I felt betrayed when I found out what was really going on. I really felt really deep in, I was just incensed about the betrayal that I felt, that the lack of education. And probably one of the leading speakers now about the vaccine guidelines is Dr. Richard Ford, who was one of my instructors at NC State. And I have his paper in front of me now. I've tried to show it to where I'm working, and they don't even want to look at it. You know, there's very minimal vaccinations that they consider are even necessary. I'm with you on board. I don't know that they're necessary or not. I think that because we're so trained to believe that, you know, distemper and parvo may occur in a dog that's not vaccinated, if you just went with Dr. Ron Schultz's abbreviated schedule, his own animals, he only does with distemper, adenovirus, and parvo one time at 15 weeks of age, and he never vaccinates them again for life. And he's followed these animals out to 15 years, challenged them with things that they would never even be challenged, hot streak viruses, and has never had a problem. And so, you know, even if you just were to say, okay, I'm going to take that very, very minimal vaccination schedule. And people like Dr. Pitcairn, when he first got out of school, he said they used to vaccinate only at like 8 and 12 weeks and maybe the next year, but then not after that. They weren't doing it. So, you know, where exactly did this, I need to do this every year, come by? And a doctor started linking it with the annual exam, as if people would not come in and have their animals looked at for any other reason but to receive this shot that was essentially a lie, telling the clients, oh, you have to have this. And
Yeah, that's the same thing the pediatricians do. They have to do their, you know, yearly history and physical for school. That's how they get them into the pediatrician's office, and the pediatricians do the same thing. I mean, I've had parents tell me that they told their pediatrician they don't want to get an inoculation in many cases because their child is sick at the time, which is a contraindication even in the physician's death reference, and the pediatrician just proceeds anyways. I mean, unbelievable things are going on out there. I personally feel that all vaccines are damaging. I don't see why any species breathing on this planet should need to have viruses injected into you. It doesn't even make sense. If a dog is going to be exposed to distemper, why is injecting it into his bloodstream going to make him survive more likely than if he just has it exposed to him by another pet that's got the problem? It doesn't even make sense.
No, and if you do have the other training, like the homeopathy, that would be the way to handle it. But unfortunately, you know what they did. The AMA essentially originated to try to debunk homeopathy because it is so successful. And I've run into both veterinarians and medical doctors that come out with this brainwashed belief that homeopathy is like next to, they consider that evil because it was really going to generate a problem with their existence, because if the truth be known, you wouldn't be going off on conventional medicine, you know, pathways for healing anyway. But with the veterinary profession, I said, okay, so we didn't sign up for this. So once you find out about it, what is the position that you take? If you owned your own hospital like I did, I stopped mandating the vaccinations. I said, look, this is what we found out. We're not going to do this anymore. And you would not believe how much trouble we had with my own patients then having to go to board somewhere if they weren't boarding with us and find out they needed the vaccine anyway, and I'd show them all the information. So this is so inseated, it's so ingrained now that it's going to take so long for us to not only get the veterinarians to shift from it, but the boarding facilities, the grooming facilities, the training, the obedience work, and then also the government, we have to get them to change, because I'm most mad about them mandating rabies vaccination. When my cat had to be done to, in order to board, he had, you know, his head got hot, he had diarrhea for a week, you know, and I was just so angry, because there's no way that this indoor cat is ever going to be a rabies risk. He's been vaccinated to begin with. He shouldn't have even have had to have those. So now you have, just like you have with people, having their government tell you that you have to damage your, you know, children, you have to damage your pets in order to do what? You know, be legal, you know, have a right to own your pet. But that's, you know, rabies vaccinations are not what's going to keep rabies out of the country. I mean, I think that pretty much the last few cases that I had heard of breaks in the rabies have come from the vaccine. So that's something to be worried about. My situation that right now is with, there are so many colleagues. There are a large group. Most of them aren't in a position to speak out. These are the people that are mostly working as associates under doctors that own a hospital. And I, for whatever reason, they won't engage with the recommendations from our three main national organizations, the American Veterinary Medical Association, and AHA, and then the AAFP, the feline practitioners. Their recommendations are to at least drop to the every 3 year. Now, that came about because we know that they last a lot longer than that, but Dr. Schultz was hoping that we already had a 3 year rabies shot so that at least we can, you know, extend it out to that. And he says very emphatically that he's not recommending that you do it every 3 years. He's saying at least don't do it any more than that. But see, it's less than 2% of the entire veterinary population that has even embraced those new guidelines. And even though there has been information out there that's now 16 years old to justify not vaccinating, and it's just, to me, I feel like it's like what Dr. Rogers wrote in his letter. It's fraudulent. It is. It's a breach of contract, and it's not marketing fraud. And the fact that most of the veterinary clients do not get full disclosure on the vaccinations, they do not get informed consent, I just think that is a terrible thing that the consumer needs to change. They need to demand it. And if they don't get that, they need to find another vet who will work within those. Because the vet that doesn't embrace that understanding is no friend to you or your animal.
I totally agree, and it is going to have to be the people who change this, because, of course, the reason that the government is mandating all of this is because of the massive pharmaceutical monies that are being stuck in their back pocket. And I just want to mention to the listeners, she just mentioned Dr. Rogers. I spoke with Dr. Rogers today. This is a veterinarian in Texas who's actually bringing a suit through the Office of the Attorney General Consumer Protection Division going after veterinarians that are not following the rules of professional conduct and are injuring pets due to over-vaccination. And it's so amazing. I mean, as healers, we're supposed to first do no harm. And we have been corrupted into doing exactly the opposite thing. And I just wanted to ask you, I don't know if you've heard of this, I moved here, I was in Long Island about 3 years ago, and I remember they found a couple bats that were allegedly rabid, although I oftentimes wonder how much of that is just a scare tactic. You know, nobody shows you the dead bats. Who's going to have the opportunity to examine them and see what really happened to them? How do we really know they died of rabies? I mean, especially in Long Island, where they're spraying pesticides, it's almost a fog over the island. But what they had started to do was they were dropping pellets in the wild, and this was supposed to be some kind of an oral rabies vaccine for the raccoons and such who would eat it. And I thought to myself, here you're worried about them contacting an animal with rabies, but you're going to feed them rabies? You know,
right.
It's just totally... Go ahead.
Well, I just know that they did have a labeled oral vaccine. They've been working with one for developing for wildlife because obviously you can't handle wildlife. But, it's from that same group of people that believe that vaccines work and that vaccines
mm-hmm.
are the way to go, you know. And if people can't step outside of that box to question, well, like you did when you went over Antoine Boutkamp's work and to actually say, well, wait a minute now, are we really doing anything positive when we do give a vaccine? One of the things that Dr. Pitcairn had told us in our class was that actually, if you look at the studies, most of these diseases weren't really affected by the use of the vaccine. That is a terrible misinterpretation of the data, that people are given this belief that, oh, smallpox was eradicated from the vaccine. That's not how it got eradicated. And right. And so if they don't understand this, and this is probably what I would say is the biggest problem, with, not only with lay people, but even within the scientific community, is that they don't understand. They can't even look at these this way, to look at the data and see. Because then they would have to admit that they've been lied to, that the people presenting this material to them when they were in school about, you know, the short, brief period that we had about why vaccines work. And it was, believe me, very short and very brief, and that, you know, you had this idea that the vaccines were good and they helped, but that's not what happened. Now, Dr. Pitcairn he has a PhD in virology, and like he started out, he said, I didn't think vaccines were a bad thing when I went to veterinary school. It's just like so many of us that stay in Western medicine for a while, we start to see, you know, we start to see something's not making sense, and these animals are getting sicker. And, you know, and what Dr. Pitcairn's last article that I sent you was really excellent. It was called A New Look at the Vaccine Question. He takes a stemper for the dogs and the cats and also rabies and looks at what is out there now, which is essentially the illustration of what those diseases would look like in their chronic form. Because what we've done is we've injected that virus into the animals, and we now have the chronic disease form of the very disease we were trying to prevent from them having.
That is so powerful.
Right, and that is, I mean, he's spot on with that, because, I mean, we just see the phobias, the fears, the aggression, fears of thunderstorms, the splitting of the nails, so many things for the chronic form of rabies. And, you know, where I was working, I was said, if you will just listen to these cases that I'm pointing out to you and give it the idea that this is possible, because most of the veterinarians do not even recognize what they're seeing. They give it another reason because animals can't talk. They don't even see that most of the things that we treat are vaccine-related, and that most of the things that we're seeing in the chronic form, they have no clue that it's actually the adverse reaction to the vaccine, but that's just happened latently, you know, not right around that 72 hours when it was administered. It's very sad.
Yes, that's the same thing they do in the children. Go ahead.
You remember I sent you a picture of one of the dogs with a huge leg blown up with a he had an everything-oma. He had a fibrosarcoma. He had sarcomas of the nerve sheath, everything in his left rear leg. And I see this almost on a daily, and they refused to believe, even though these are biopsied areas where injections had been given. I mean, there was no trauma to that area in these animals except for by the vaccine. The pathologist reports that this can be caused by such and such trauma, such and such this, that, and then vaccine, or they say foreign injected material. That's their famous line. And yet they don't see that these cancers are resulting 2, 4, 6 years down the line, and the animal ends up, it's so painful to look at anymore. And, you know, then we have to kill them because the owners don't have enough money to go through, not that it would work that much, but surgery and chemotherapy. And it's just heartbreaking, because almost all of these cases, we did this to them. We did this when we injected the vaccine. And the other picture I showed you of that poor older spaniel that was so immune compromised, he had every single year he had been going to the vets. Every single year they had been feeding him, based on the commercials, what they thought was a good food, which was Beneful, and you know it's a level 5 toxic diet, and they thought they were doing the right thing, and you know nobody intercepted them and told them about nutrition, and nobody intercepted and told them that all of these things were injecting every year all over into this dog that didn't hardly go outside was actually killing him over time.
Well, that's what's so amazing is that the vets can't see this. Like you said, when the tumors are actually developing at the very injection site. I mean,
right.
You know, the scientific method includes observation, you know, and it's a well-known fact that toxins injected into people can cause toxicity. I mean, they talk about carcinogens. Vaccines, in my opinion, are one of the worst carcinogens that we're giving to people or pets, but yet they have let those blinders on, like you said, and
right.
I'm sure that money is largely involved because, you know, let the client have the dog's leg amputated or what, the one that you sent me, the story, they had to take off like most of its thigh and the back
right.
leg. I mean, it's just unbelievable what's going on, butchering these poor animals, and
right.
and you just can't even imagine what they must be thinking, you know, the people, as they're watching this happen. Even people that have successive pets that are all dying at young ages, and they keep
right.
up with the same program. They get a new pet, and they do the same thing for the new pet, and that pet dies in 4 or 5 years, and they go on to another.
Right.
It's amazing. Go ahead.
It's unbelievable how naive we all are, and I guess when I point this out to the veterinarians, the first thing they say to me, I don't know how to explain. They just have these myopic glasses on that they can't really see outside what's, you know, like right in a small vision in front of them. But the first thing they say to me, because I ask this question, how many of these viruses, I went on some of these cancer registries and saw how many of these diseases, the cancer, I said, how many of these dogs have been vaccinated every year? You never see their vaccine history listed. You'll see if they're male, they're
right.
female, they're altered, they're not altered. But guess what is always missing, always? Their vaccine history and what food they've been feeding. They're not the people who are in all of these schools that teach veterinarians. I don't care if you're talking about Cornell or North Carolina State, anybody. Nobody's looking at what's really causing the cancer. And the other thing is they just recently had come up with a universal area on where you should even administer the vaccines. That came out of the work with the task force for the feline fibrosarcomas that were occurring with some of the injection sites. And they said, okay, well, we want you to always put rabies in the right rear. We want you to put the distemper in the right front. We want you to put the leukemia in the left rear. Well, that is really fairly recent that they've even started doing that. That's if the veterinarian feels like he's, you know, going to do what the task force recommends, which, like I said, is unfortunate. We can't make that a mandate. But so they started doing it with the cats, but they do not do that with the dogs, and especially now that there are some veterinarians that will inoculate an animal with every single vaccine they have on the market. They had one down in the town where I had last worked, and it didn't even matter if they came out saying that this vaccine was not only not recommended, it was not core, it didn't even work, and if they could charge for it, they would give it and administer it to the animal. It's just very sad, but I've been going back now. I make sure on the records if I do have to give a vaccine that I put down where it's at, and I tell them why I'm doing that, and I make an effort to make sure it's in the appropriate place. I've seen needles jabbed into these animals where I know it's going very close to the rib. I know it's going into nerve sheaths. I know it's going where it doesn't belong. And then later on, it may be 2 years, it may be 4 years, but then you have a round cell tumor develop, you have a mast cell tumor. And after talking to the other doctor yesterday, he has an interesting, he's also a certified veterinary acupuncturist, and he saw a different thing that's happening. And I guess we're just now realizing that, and some of these fascial planes, these tumors are occurring at acupuncture sites. This is not where the animal received acupuncture, but this is a site that we know that is immunologically, or it's important to the animal's body in some way, and it's a little downstream from where the actual inoculation occurred. And he said, maybe this is because the animal really doesn't know how to do this, because this is a natural way to be inoculated with an antigen. Like you were saying, it should have come in through the mucosal surface. And so this might be a way that it's ending up, you know, where they are. But I mean, I can't look at any dog anymore. I mean, I know that they do have some that aren't associated with vaccines and food, but I mean, that's really the biggest portion of most of the disease that we study. I can find a paper, especially if you go on Dr. Merkula's site, where it will connect either the adjuvant, the preservative, the virus, the combination of the above to what that animal's disease process is. And I don't see that coming out with any kind of, I just don't see it coming out from the pathologist. And I feel like it's their responsibility to point this out to the doctor, because when your passport report comes back, what you make a move on to do for that animal is dependent on what caused that tumor. And just way too many veterinarians just, you know, flutter their eyes and go, oh, well, who knows what causes cancer?
Exactly.
Very sad.
And they're not studying the cancer produced by the vaccines for the same reason they're not studying it in children. There's many people making a lot of money off cancer. And this
right.
apparently is the main goal, to keep that factory going.
Right. I believe that. And, I mean, think about how much of the business the veterinarians would not have if we were more of a type of doctor like a naturopath. You know,
exactly.
I'm not saying that there's not a reason to have veterinarians. I'm just saying that the way Western medicine, conventional medicine, is done today, and especially with the intensive, massive, I consider irresponsible vaccine protocols, that they essentially make, I would say at least 70% of the disease that we see, at least. You know, they're not going to cause the dog to get hit by a car necessarily, but anything that you see as far as your endocrine diseases, your autoimmune, your allergies, I understand by doing so many injections into the animal, you're shifting their normal ability at cell immunity, which is how they would respond if something was coming in through the mucosal surface in the nose or the mouth, and then shifting it over to an overproduction of IgE, which is why we have so many more allergies, inflammatory bowel disease, you know, those kind of instances, because of too much antigenic stimulation, and then it exhausts the body. You have adrenal gland suppression, exhaustion pretty much. That's what I would call it. Just the body is just exhausted. And then your largest barrier of your immune system, which is your skin, can no longer keep anything out. They have yeast overgrowth. They have, you know, this. And actually, the Chinese medicine, what we consider those really bad skin conditions, is a blood deficiency. And blood deficiencies are also what are called vaccinosis, too much vaccines. They deplete your deplete your genetics and what you were given with to have life on this planet. And you certainly aren't, you know, building that up with good foods, unless you're feeding raw foods or real foods. You feed most of the foods that come out in the grocery food stores today, and you're not giving them any more foundation from there, so it just doesn't take very long. And this is why you see these animals with these terrible skin problems.
Yes, and I wanted to underline what you said, because one of these papers that you sent me gave me information that I didn't know about, which I'm sure is also true in people as well. Like you said, a lot of these anterior cruciate ligament injuries and the patella dislocations and all these kinds of things, the same
right.
kind of phenomena has got to be happening in humans as well.
Right.
So,
I think so. If you understand that Purdue study, I had never seen that before until it came up on the Just Say No to Vaccines website, and I couldn't believe it, because it was all done at a veterinary hospital. There were all veterinarians involved in the study, and yet it was actually done for a human study that had to do with autoimmunity, and anyway, if you read into that. But I was just like, well, we don't even get the results. As veterinarians, we're not even given the results of so much of this research, which has been done on animals, that came out to be very, very negative towards, you know, vaccination. That particular case study, when I read it, what I saw in it was almost all of our structural deformities that we see, from the degenerative myopathy in shepherds to, we see all these ACL injuries now. They've been trying to blame it. Oh, I think it's because we're spaying and neutering them too early. And I thought, no, when I saw that study, they all had autoantibodies formed against the collagen, against the myelin, against all of your support structures. So now we wonder why all of these degenerative diseases, you know, and they're some of them, the vertebral columns are breaking down, they have spondylosis. And I'm like, can they just not see? This is why we're getting it. I mean, nobody needs to be injected with anything like that, and certainly not every single year. I mean, I think it's just a crime. That paper that's by the woman in the UK called Vaccination and an Industrialized Crime, or the one that I sent called Vaccine Racket. I mean, it's all very true. We're having some of the best articles that really describe what's going on in veterinary medicine today. One of them was written by the woman homeopath in the UK, Kathleen O'Driscoll. The other one is on a website. She's an Australian homeopath. And it's sad to say, but homeopathy is the one that recognizes this. They are the ones that have the answer for this, and they are the ones that have been strangled, you know, from getting their truths out, you know, by the AMA, the one group along with Big Pharma who has a reason to strangle the truth would be that group. And that is exactly, their perversion has gone into veterinary medicine as well as the human field.
Yes, and a very good book I want to mention to the listeners, which describes the history that Dr. Jordan is speaking of how the AMA was formed to squash homeopathy, is a book called The Medical Mafia by Guylaine Lang Tote. She's a Canadian physician who lost her medical license for writing that book. But she goes into the whole history of how it all went down, and it's really so disgusting when you read this. And I just wanted to mention a couple of statements that is in this Purdue vaccine study, because this is what amazes me. After these research scientists go through all this description of all the pathology that they found in the necropsy of the animals and in the lab tests of the animals and all the proof of autoimmunity of all different types, they make the statement that although the pathogenic significance of the vaccine-induced autoantibodies is still unclear, there are a number of ways to prevent their induction. Not vaccinating dogs is not a viable option because the benefits of vaccine clearly outweigh the still uncertain risk of immune-mediated disease. So here in their own study, they just proved the autoimmunity that's caused by inoculations, yet they still make this ridiculous statement that not vaccinating dogs is not a viable option. That's the same kind of thing that, you know, the CDC says. You know, occasionally they'll admit, yes, there are some vaccine-related illnesses, but they always make this blanket statement that vaccines have, you know, eradicated polio and smallpox and all those other things that you mentioned. And another statement that they make, which gave me the chills, it says, new generations of vaccines, especially naked DNA vaccines, are free of serum components, and these should not induce autoantibodies. But what are these naked DNA vaccines going to do? And this is described in my paper, Inoculations, the True Weapons of Mass Destruction. Those plasmids of naked DNA are going to incorporate into our very genetic structure and mutate us for our, you know, offspring in the future. And also now, they're doing all these tests to find the genes linked with certain diseases. And my response to that is, I'm not surprised that there's altered genes in these people with diseases. Perhaps that was part of the assault that caused them to get the disease. It's on so many different levels, because once your DNA is mutated, strange things can happen. So
right.
This is like another... Go ahead.
Right. When I was at NC State University getting my undergraduate degree, I did a honors project in medical microbiology, but I came out of the office and saw there was a resident across the hall from me who had a poster. He was a virologist, and he had the Pyramid of Life, and it was sort of like skewed upside down, and instead of having the viruses and microbes on the bottom, he had a virus on the pinnacle. And I remember looking at that and knowing what I know about the ability of genetic material to be injected and all of the machinery that a virus has to change, you know, genetics within their own component and to, like, shift the outside envelope so they can't make a vaccine to protect against it. I thought, oh, my God, I hope that's not true. And when you think about it, I mean, look, with what's going on now, I am so upset about genetically modified foods and then, you know, the incorporation of these genetics. It's not going in a very good place. What I'm working with right now is to try to figure out, okay, if we have screwed this all up as badly as we obviously have, whether or not people will recognize it now. I sort of like Harris Coulter's book, The Assault on the American Brain, that he has out about the overuse of vaccinations, criminality and social violence. As a result of the over-vaccination, he says in there's a whole chapter in the back, which I said you can just take out the doctor and put in the veterinarian, and it would read exactly the same as what's going on. But he said, you know, we will look back at this time at what we were doing in shame and horror, and I have no doubts. I just hope that we are able to look back and not go on, keep incorporating these changes, genetic changes and genetically modified food and making sheep that are 75%, you know, human genes and everything else, because I don't believe it's going in a good place. And we don't have any long-term studies to show what is going to happen as a result of that unless you actually take to heart any of these past life talks that you had from Edward Cayce that he had with that, which things like that were what led to the destruction of the civilization of Atlantis. And you know, there's a lot of people, it's like, I'm more worried about them understanding that vaccines are not a good thing than understanding exactly where this is going to lead us if we keep messing around with genetics like this. But it's just very sad. I wonder, because of what I'm working on, is if those changes have occurred to transmutate the DNA, then what can we do to reverse them? And I do think that the use of energetic medicine, which is certainly not Western medicine. This would be working with things like homeopathy, working with things like Reiki. If there's a way to unswitch or fix the DNA mutations that have occurred, and personally I do believe that the answer is out there for us to do it, and that's really where we need to be concentrating research right now. But as long as we keep backpedaling to support Big Pharma and keep backpedaling in the production of disease, then we're not going to find ease, which is the health, that's just wellness.
Well, the good news is there are people of conscience, such as yourself and many other veterinarians, and I consider myself in this group of people who have risked a lot to speak the truth, and we will find those techniques. I do know that there is a glyconutrient product that has reversed DNA damage and even reversed Down syndrome in quite a few children, and I'm sure that there's energetic techniques. There's all kinds of things available, but of course that is the reason why the representatives in the District of Criminals are constantly trying to take our supplements away from us and make all this legislation that's going to make it where only the medical doctors can give prescriptions for these different things. And of course, if they start doing that, they'll take their license away. But I wanted to mention again the name of that book that you mentioned, because that's one of my favorite books on vaccines, Vaccination, Social Violence, and Criminality, The Medical Assault on the Human Brain, or it could be the American Brain. But I want to mention to the listeners where you can get that book, because it's not easy to find. And one of my favorite sources for books on vaccinations is thinktwice.com. Think Twice is one word, and there's many excellent books on there. Another one, Vaccines, Are They Really Safe and Effective, by Neil Z. Miller, which is a very short read, and he goes into that book and describes how did polio go away? Sanitation. You know, it's very obvious that the polio vaccine actually causes polio, and as a matter of fact, what they did, just like they're doing now in the case of autism, which is subacute sclerosing panencephalitis, they just changed the name to hide the fact that the measles vaccine causes it. They did the same thing with the polio vaccine. When people started getting polio from the vaccine, they called it aseptic meningitis and all of these kinds of things. So the people at the top, the lunatics who are in charge of the scientific asylum, these mad scientists that are doing all of these crazy things that you've been talking about with no regard for their effect. I mean, whatever happened to testing the safety of something before you just let it out in the market and let the population be guinea pigs? It's totally insane.
because the FDA is no longer, I don't consider them our friend.
No, the Fraudulent Drug Administration, as I call them. And let me just mention one other book. I don't know if you have this book in your library. If you don't, I highly recommend that you get it. It's kind of difficult to find, but I got mine off eBay. It's called Vaccination, the Silent Killer, A Clear and Present Danger by Ida Onaroff and Eleanor McBean. And this book talks about the 1918 flu epidemic, how it was actually caused by inoculations given to soldiers in World War I. And one of the most amazing things in this book is they describe a lawsuit that one of the authors actually brought against the federal government to try to halt the swine flu vaccine in the 1970s, realizing, of course, that it was an insane thing to do, and there was all kinds of cases of Guillain-Barré syndrome happening. And the lawsuit was dismissed. The judge in the case talked about how they didn't have standing. And I'm going to quote a little excerpt here on page 94. When asked how we could get standing, we were told that if you took a shot and dropped dead, that would give you standing. So this is the kind of insanity that's out there. It's so obvious what they're doing, the damage that they're causing, and yet they just continue to look the other way. It's like you know the problem, but you look every place else but. You just keep your eyes closed. Go ahead.
I've seen the veterinarians. It's unbelievable, the excuses. And finally, I just overloaded them with material, and I realized they're refusing to look at it. They're not even, you know, and this is what really gets me is that they, at first their big thing was, I'm not going to listen to it unless it's peer-reviewed, scientifically tested, you know. And that's such a joke because I said, do you realize now that there is absolutely no undeniable, there's no question that the one most dangerous, potent medical procedure that you do every single day has no scientific backing, has no evidence-based medicine to support it, and that is the administration of the vaccine every single year. And I said, and it says clearly on there, the FDA label says no animal is to be inoculated that is not healthy. Well, thanks to the overuse of vaccination and the bad foods, we no longer have healthy animals. There's really very few. I see them coming in there, and they're like hyper or hypothyroid if it's a dog or a cat. I'm like, why is that animal being vaccinated? I said, the autoantibodies that produce that endocrine disease came from vaccinations. That would preclude the need for giving that a vaccine, besides the fact that we already know they last 7 to 10 years. But yet it's going on. And, you know, I can't be there to monitor any more than the place where I'm immediately working, but I mean, just this week, I saw 6 different adverse reactions to the vaccine that was administered, and do you know that none of them were reported? Now they're not even having a place to report them to, except for back to the people that sell them, as if they're going to do anything about it.
Right.
And when I have them biopsied, I'm finding that we have plasma cells and lymphocytes and all this agitation going on because of some kind of an immune reaction. And then we also are seeing a really bad deep fungal infections. It's how did they get there? They got there from the friggin' vaccine. And it's like they just won't see that. They will not share that information with the client. So the client's paying for the biopsy, the anesthesia, the medicine to treat it. And then the next year when they come in, do you think that veterinarian is suggesting that maybe they don't need that vaccine? No, they're not. So from a pet owner myself and from somebody who's always cared about animals, that's what got me into the field to begin with, I would run away from a veterinarian that is not going to give you informed consent, that's not going to give you full disclosure, and is not going to obey your wishes and not vaccinate that pet. The other issue that I've had is because they have no training in homeopathy, so they have no concept of how they would handle the disease if it was to come up in an animal and they didn't have the vaccine to rely on. Besides the fact that we see a lot of vaccinated animals still get the virus or the disease anyway. And I told them, I said, I would have no problems because I would be focused on nutrition and homeopathy, and that is how I would treat it if it did show up. And there always are going to be viruses that come through when there's an overpopulation of animals or people. I mean, that's what happens with distemper coming through, huge populations of overproduced cats and wiping them out 30 and 40 a week at the trailer parks where I used to live. that's going to continue to happen because that's one of the ways that nature does take care of a problem of overpopulation. You know, so, I mean, viruses are going to occur, and there are going to be individuals out there that will succumb to them because their immune systems are no longer, you know, functioning. But before it was because they didn't have adequate nutrition. Now it's going to be because they were depressed from the overuse of the vaccine to begin with.
Yes, and I just want to bring up that name, Antoine Bichamp, again, and I'm going to have a guest on my show in the next few weeks that's going to tell us more about Antoine Bichamp. But his very important work at the time that Louis Pasteur was coming out with this one germ, one disease theory proved that it's the toxicity of the body that can actually allow these viruses to mutate into more pathogenic forms because they believe you're dying, and so they're going to decompose you. That's their job. And so it's so important to keep the animal's body clean, just like the human body. If your body is full of all kinds of toxins, you're not going to be able to fight off anything that you get. And what you just mentioned again, also in terms of the pets, they come in, my God, these poor pets have the cancers on them. They have to be biopsied, put to sleep. So, of course, then they've got that assault of the anesthesia on them, not to mention the fact I had one client that had a pet. They gave the pet, like, 7 vaccines on one day, heart guard, you know, the pesticides for the fleas. I mean, the dog was almost dead. And it's truly amazing that the vets don't seem to get it, that you can't just give all these poisons, especially on the same day. What kind of an assault is that? That's like putting them, I can't even give a comparison, putting them so much in harm's way and then, you know, giving the client the bill and say, you know, see you next year for your yearly vaccine because just like you said, they're all the pets are sick, just like the children now. There's no such thing I don't hear of anymore of a pediatrician that would refuse to vaccinate a sick child. Because they don't see any normal children. So if they refuse, they wouldn't be able to do their vaccines.
Right. And unfortunately, with the veterinary population, I mean, that's true. I don't think they were never taught what's in the vaccine and what the vaccine does, what if chronic administration, whether they even needed to have chronic administration, what would happen if they were given this intensive. They just never even addressed this. And this is a terrible, terrible falling down in the responsibility of every single veterinary school that doesn't, you know, approach this, as well as anybody in the veterinary schools that are not, I mean, there's so few nutrition programs out there, and yet nutrition, when I first graduated, I didn't know very much, and at least our school was starting to give you something, even if it was biased and conflicted, but they at least gave you something. And when I came out, I first had the opportunity to have life stage diets in my food, in my practice, and I thought to myself, you know, I don't think that's our place. Well, it didn't take but about 2 or 3 years when I realized that there was a terrible deficit. We hadn't been taught about nutrition, and your whole blueprint for health starts with nutrition, and so I better, you know, giddy on up there and get caught up with what was what I needed to know about being able to advise my clients, because nutrition was everything. So just because somebody's wearing a white coat, believe me, they can be the worst person. Well, put it this way. I would say true healers rarely wear white coats.
I agree with that one. And, yes, I just want to mention that when I was in medical school, we received 10 hours of nutrition lectures and 2 years of pharmacology. So that gives you some idea as to who's controlling the show, who's paying all the money for these universities that have medical schools and veterinary schools. And, of course, all you have to do is go into the hospital and have a hospital meal, and you'll see what they know about nutrition. I mean, colored Jell-O and, you know, Ensure out of tin cans and all this kind of garbage. It's so disgusting. And, once again, it is going to be the people that are going to have to demand changes be made, because I'm sure it's not going to come from the people in our profession. They're too indoctrinated. They're too worried about their pocketbook. They're too afraid to step out of the box because sometimes it gets a little interesting when you start to speak out. And also, they don't want to put themselves out of business. And they also don't want to admit what they've done. I mean, I can just imagine the horror someday when the pediatricians and the veterinarians, because like you said, those are the two specialties that are supposed to be protecting the innocent, when it comes into their consciousness as to what they've done. I can't even imagine the horror of it, and especially if they've had an opportunity to hear people such as ourselves speak about this issue, yet they refuse to listen. When my son was brain damaged from his inoculations, this is what opened up my eyes, because I was a good little mother. I went marching my son into the pediatrician's office whenever she said to get him shot up with whatever she said to shoot him up with. And once I woke up and I accrued, first of all, I reversed his damage with homeopathic remedies. That's what really put the light on, because then I knew. I mean, it was so self-evident. And, of course, I never learned the word homeopathy in medical school. I had to find out about that on my own. But when I went into the pediatrician with a mountain of evidence, and I gave it to her, and I said, this is what the vaccines are doing to the children. Her response to me was, I don't have time to read it. And my response to her was, you may not have time to read it, but I just told you what it says. And if you continue doing what you're doing knowingly, there's a price to pay for that. And I'm not talking anything even in this world. I'm talking on the spiritual level. You're going to have to pay. There is such a thing as universal justice for what you've done. But I did hear from one of my clients that shortly around that time, she started having the nurse giving all the inoculations. And the client was just telling me that it was funny that Dr. Milamedov stopped giving the inoculations herself. Now the nurse was doing it. And I just laughed to myself, so I figured, oh, that's her answer. If she doesn't put in the needle, then she's not responsible. But I just want to read one paragraph from Dr. Bob Rogers' excellent letter to the Office of the Attorney General, Consumer Protection Division in Texas. And I got his permission today. I'm going to post this on my website, so it should be up there in a couple days. You can all read it. It's just amazing what this man has done. And what he says is, I assert that the present practice of marketing of vaccinations for companion animals constitutes fraud by misrepresentation, fraud by silence, theft by deception, and undue influence by all veterinarians engaged in companion animal practice in this state. And this is the same kind of thing that has to be done for the children as well.
Right. There is a book out there called The Vaccine Guide for Dogs and Cats, What Every Pet Lover Should Know. And that one, I think you can get it off of Amazon.com. It has a foreword in it that Dr. Pitcairn wrote. But, you know, Dr. Pitcairn told us in class, he said, somebody's going to have to get sued for this to stop. That's the only thing they listen to. And and he was right. Right.
But the problem there, Dr. Jordan, is that the courts are just as corrupt as our professions are. I just read to you what happened, and this is back in the 70s, before it even got as bad as it is now, this case being dismissed, telling the litigants they didn't have any standing, and they wouldn't have standing unless they took the shot themselves and dropped dead. So I'm not against lawsuits. There may be an honest attorney out there. I have only found one in all my years, and he's very busy trying to keep Codex from going forward. But, you know, there may be possible to have something done, but it's just like you said, the veterinarians are refusing to admit that there's an association of the vaccine with the problem. As a matter of fact, one of the most amazing things you sent me was the story about this dog. I can't remember, this may have actually been even where you were working, that the dog came in and the dog was already old and had all these chronic diseases and was basically almost on its last legs. They give the vaccine, and the dog just barely makes it home before he's dead. And then the client has to bring him in to have him cremated or whatever. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Right, and I see that every day. It's not me doing it, but I see other veterinarians doing it. I've seen the old cats come in. They're, you know, they might be 14 years old or 16 years old. They are in chronic renal failure. And we know now that the injectable distemper, we know it. There's papers out there. Plus, there's an alternative that would not do that. But the injectable distemper vaccine leads to renal failure. It causes autoantibodies against the kidney cells of the cat because of the culture was maintained on a initial kidney cell from cats. And so it's now like, I don't know, putting a transplant in there, but this cat came in and it could hardly, but they shot it up with the rabies and the distemper, and then they're wondering why it dies, you know, and I'm just, this case that you remembered, that just happened last week, the dog came in, it was just, probably because I didn't speak the language that client spoke was the only reason why I didn't end up with them. But I thought that dog may have been going into a dilatated volvulus, a gastric volvulus, where the stomach was twisting because it was having problems breathing. And when I saw it go in there and then I saw the vaccines light up, I just was like, you know, you just have to look your veterinarian in the face. They're either ethical or they're not. And both of them can have a license to practice.
Exactly. And as a matter of fact, the one who speaks the truth is much more likely to have a problem. And I want to just mention, you're talking about renal failure. I have a client in Canada who, when he was 18 years old, received the meningitis vaccine. Within a couple of weeks, he had a stroke, an 18-year-old with a stroke. And now, 6 years later, he is on dialysis for renal failure. So I'm convinced that all of these nephritises, they're all autoimmune reactions against the kidney, whether it's the glomerulus, which is the actual filtering apparatus, or a different part of the kidney. There's so many different names they have for whatever area of the kidney is being attacked by autoimmunity. But it's all from vaccines, and that's why, as I said, the entire specialty of internal medicine, it's all vaccine-induced diseases, and it will be proved that. And I know it's going to happen in our lifetimes because we're going to make sure of it. Now that all of us are finding each other, I am networked with so many chiropractors all over the world that are helping to get the word out, and it's going to take a critical mass of people, and they're going to have to stand up and stop being intimidated by all these white coats and just say no. And when you go into the offices, demand, I want to see proof that the vaccines are safe or effective. And I like to give my clients a couple of hard questions to ask. One of my favorites is, could you please explain to me, since we're so worried about the West Nile virus, and they're telling us to get rid of all the standing water so we won't be bitten by a mosquito, how is it that when you take those viruses and stick them in a syringe, it all of a sudden becomes a wonderful medicine? And
right.
There's no way they can answer that question.
Yeah, I went to China 2 years ago as part of my training program, and I was so excited because they were talking about an injectable herb that they can use to reverse kidney damage. And I was excited about this because I knew that a lot of our cats in the United States were suffering kidney failure because of the injectable distemper vaccine that so many of them were receiving year after year after year. And whether or not it was causing an amyloidosis or a protein deposition, or whether it was an autoimmune problem because of the actual kidney cells, I was really getting down into the pathology on whether or not this would actually work to reverse that. And, you know, it's just very disheartening to know that really with as much intelligence as it out there in our country, if we were geared in the correct direction instead of working for Big Pharma, that, you know, so much better things could be done. But, I mean, we would have our next 50 years spent reversing and detoxifying the effects of what I consider black medicine. That's the folder I keep all of the Western and conventional medicine information under. And it's just very sad because people go every year into the veterinary office, into their doctor's office, and they continue to support what I consider is, you know, evil. And they're giving money to support the practices that are making their animals sicker. And all they do is end up losing a good friend a lot earlier, and nobody sees this. Nobody sees that this is a self-perpetuating problem because they don't stop. Maybe the answer isn't that somebody has to get sued, but the answer is going to be that the consumer has to just put their foot down and say, no, I'm not going to have it.
Yes, just say no. I totally agree with you. It's what everybody has to do, and to stop believing just because somebody's got a white coat on and they have a bunch of initials behind their names, unless the initials are some of the kind of initials like you have, where you've gone to the quote-unquote alternative route, which, of course, people will eventually realize it's the only way to go if you want to remain healthy. it's a joke word. You know who invented that phrase, Big Pharma. But people have to go to their health care providers and start asking these hard questions. Stop letting them intimidate you. I've been veterinary offices where there's a sign on the wall as soon as you go in that we will not treat your pet unless they're up to date on vaccinations.
And turn around and leave. Right. They need to
exactly.
turn around and leave.
Yes. And of course, pediatricians do the same thing. They threaten people that they won't take care of their children unless they get them inoculated. And I say, that's fine. Just don't go back to them then, because that's what kind of intimidation tactic is that? How dare they tell parents these things, just like you said, without giving them informed consent of what the vaccine risks really are? And even though the vaccine manufacturers, you know, make it like there's very low risk, like 1 in 1,000 chances of something happening. Well, if that one child is yours, guess what? That's not going to be pretty. And, of course, they play with all their numbers. They totally underreport vaccine injuries. It's even admitted by the CDC that only about 10% of the reactions are ever reported in the first place.
Oh,
so
I believe
people have to start using their heads. Get some common sense. And think about what we're talking about. Why is it better to inject yourself with disease or your pet than obtain it naturally through the mucosal surfaces? That's how the Creator designed our bodies, to fight off disease with the immune system.
Right. And if they ask me, they're like, what would you do? I look right at them. I said, I don't vaccinate my pet. I'm really quite angry that they even have that rule out there for the rabies. And I would fly under the radar every chance I had, you know, to do it. I can't bring myself to break the law, but I certainly understand why people would go around the law every chance they had to give the rabies vaccine, to make it mandated, when we know that, you know, 7 to 10 years, and unfortunately now the studies are just now being done by outside people. Dr. Gene Dodds has got the 7-year challenge study, and that was smart. That was double the 3-year vaccine plus one. So, and it takes time to get those. She's a very well-respected researcher, but do you think that there's a lot of people helping her? No, she has to get that money. And I told my client, I said, instead of getting that rabies vaccine this year, why don't you send that $15 to them? And, you know, and then what we'll do is a titer on your animal if that's legal in the state. But, you know, there is no laws that you have to have a distemper, that you have to have a leukemia, that you have to have any of those vaccines. And if your animal stays inside the house, then what your veterinarian should be helping you with is proper nutrition, environmental enrichment for carnivores that live inside the house that no longer, you know, have anything to hunt. There's lots of other things that we can work with, but it's just too easy for them to have a cattle call practice and run them through there, basically sort of pat them on the back and inject them up with 4 or 5 things and send them out the door. I'm so ashamed. I'm just ashamed, and I think it's going to be a lot more horrific once. I don't even know if the human mind could comprehend what damage that Western medicine has done.
I totally concur, and if they go forward with this bird flu vaccine program, now that they've got the bird flu vaccine license, which will, of course, cause the bird flu pandemic, then we're going to see untold misery on the human scale. But I wanted to just ask you to cover 2 more things quickly. First of all, do you have any good book that you could recommend to pet owners on pet nutrition? Is there anything that you would consider an important book to have in their library?
That is a very good question, and it was actually asked within our group on the listserv for the Veterinary Botanical Medicine Association. And it's funny because some of the best information out there, I believe, has been written by owners of their own dogs. And you know, I'm not sure I have that one. The woman who wrote, she cured her dog Bullet from cancer with natural feeding. But anyway, to make a long story short, we went through this about trying to collect books. There's a number of them on Amazon.com. Stromberg has one about home diets for dogs and cats. I'm always looking for information. Dr. Crusley's Coldwater Veterinary Clinic up in Vermont had a 9-page article he just sent me that they send to their clients about natural feeding. There isn't really one good source out there. There's a book for humans called The Tao of Nutrition, and I really like that book, and I've got the big one from Dr. Haas about nutrition, and I pretty much apply those standards to the animals as well. I've had some food therapy classes down at the Qi Institute, which were very good. Dr. Roger Clemens has given me some homemade diets that I can pass on to my pets and the cats. A lot of times it's spinach and sardines, but the deficits can be made up with Flintstone vitamins. if you're making your own diets. Flintstone vitamins work very well for the animals, and the other books about like feeding. And so the issue about the nutrition came up because everybody, you know, has their own idea about what animals should eat. And believe it or not, there really isn't any good documented research out there to back up what they're doing. I've got CDs about people who are fed animals out of cancer, but they're always coming back to these basics: fresh food, organics, and your fish oils. And you know, like I said, it's just it's not easy because there's very few foods out there that I would recommend. I'd already told you about the Nature a Pet company. You can go to www.naturapet, that would be naturapet.com. They have a comparison food wizard for the commercial foods that are out there. They'll easily show you the difference between, they have a lot of the commercial foods on there, and once you get to the food that you're feeding now, click on the ingredients and see where they come from. But the Natura foods, they have Innova, they have Karma, which is their organic line, they have Evo, which is a grain-free that comes in dry and canned, they have California Natural. They also make HealthWise, which is for the breeders that have more animals. That was the only company that I allowed to take up space in my small holistic store retail area with dry kibble, and they have both dry and canned. I can personally tell you that pets will always usually go for raw foods or real foods over premium foods, and not all premium foods, which you have to get in your mind. The premium foods are going to be human-grade ingredients that use your better oils, so Canidae, Feel-A-Day, Pinnacle, Merix, Wysong, to name a few. I'm sure there's others, but they're mostly going to be your organic foods, your holistic diets that are going to be better. And then I would build upon that by there is absolutely nothing wrong with feeding table scraps. As long as you're not eating processed foods, you're not eating from Wendy's and McDonald's and Kentucky Fried Chicken, you can give them lean meats, the brown rice, the steamed vegetables. You're not going to have problems there. But, you know, it's just sad. I see so many nutritional diets that are going out the door, and I'm like, oh, you know why that animal even has to have that? I mean, why do cats have diabetes? Because they're not eating as carnivores. I mean, you know, I got really angry because the one company that started out with having a diet for that, I said they ought to know how to cure it. They know how they caused it. You know, all that corn gluten meal is not good for a carnivore. But so
yeah,
I can't. The list of books, I'll be glad to send you the list that I had sent to the group before, but I would be hard-pressed to say that there's one out there that's actually written by a veterinarian. That's very good.
What a surprise. The same thing with human doctors. And I just wanted to mention something that just came in my mind as you were talking about the pet food. When I lived in Long Island, I was going to a holistic pet, holistic vet, and I actually did a talk with him on vaccinations, and he informed the group that what they're often doing now, even, and this is so horrific to me, is they're taking euthanized animals and using them to make dog food. Had you heard of that?
Oh, yeah. So if you look into that book, Foods Pets Die For, the woman from Canada, she was an investigative reporter. She became that way after she lost her animals to commercial pet foods. But she did a very, very good job of actually, you know, investigating this, and she has it all nailed out. And I believe she's got a newer edition. But in Foods Pets Die For, this is the basic concept. And like I said, if you go to thenatureofpet.com and then also look at the food comparison wizard, we'll take a level 5 toxic diet, say like Old Roy, and you look in there and see that they're not actually putting meat, or if they put any kind of meat-based product, it's coming from the dead, diseased, dying, and disabled group. That means the cows or the roadkill, anything that may also have antibiotics, steroids, hormones. I mean, even the animals that had been euthanized, and even animals that had been dying in this recent pet food poisoning. There was a lot of animals that died from renal failure. We had over 12 at the place where I'm working now, and four of them were actually had the labeled foods that were recalled, so there was no question about it. It's very sad because that was so underreported. If you go to Pet Connection, I believe they had over 30,000 animals that were affected by that. And again, there's a group of veterinarians that believe that this We know that there's poisons are in those foods. That's not the question, but we actually believe that this had to do with genetically modified foods that have been shown to cause renal failure in mice and rats. And now we know they cause it in cats and dogs. And if they do get into the human food chain in any, you know, quantity, that it very well may cause renal failure in people. It's just much bigger than just that, you know. But I would say that yes, there are practices that do have their animals rendered to a place that does protein collection, and that yes, they found the rabies tags, the plastic bags, the collars.
Oh my God.
And the very animals that are dying from over vaccination and that have cancer go right straight back into some of these foods. And the ones that you see on available that use the 4D group and that also have BHT and things that have been taken out of the human food chain because they know they cause cancer, you know, it's all tractable back. And she pretty much says who does what. Now, I know that the FDA.gov has a site, and I saw it the other day. It started in 1998. They did a study. I had all of it, all 28 pages of it printed out, and there wasn't anybody from Purina, ProPlan, Puppy Beef and Rice, which was what I considered the very top of the line food, to Hill's and Science Diet, Iams, Bill Jack, all of those foods. They were all found to have pentobarb residues, and of course, you know, pentobarb is what we use to euthanize animals. They were
and
not.
And they call it. They call it protein collection when these veterinarians sell the dead animals to these companies.
Yeah, the different groups are rendering the animals' bodies back into for protein source. I've driven behind the truck that I saw in North Carolina that went to the county pound and picked up the animals there that had been euthanized. I've seen that same truck in the Wendy's parking lot cleaning out the grease traps and, you know, the rancid fats. And sure, they end up, guess where, the whole commodities market are things that you can't put in the human food chain. Where do you think they go? That's one of the reasons why we have a lot of skin and ear problems and adverse, you know, reactions in some of these animals. And I always ask them, you know, actually where I work now, 3 weeks before the pet food debacle came about, they brought me aside and told me I was spending too much time with the clients talking to them about what they were feeding and trying to get them to feed up to a better program. Okay, now they don't say anything to me because now after this, I was the only one whose records had filled out what the clients were actually feeding. And when I would see these foods that were level 5 toxic diets, like the Benefuls and the Old Roys, and I would tell them, I would say, you have to go, I'd send them where to go to get the information, and you're going to have to do better. And I'd tell them why. They had, you know, ingredients in there that are not helping their coats. They're, you know, rancid fats, and then, you know, who knows what all is in there. The other thing is, I have, and I can actually send it to you, in 2000s when I first heard about this case of a toddler that died, and they didn't know why she died, how she got in touch with penicillin, because nobody, they knew she had an allergy to it, and the pediatrician had not administered it, and when they did a home study, they found her, she crawled past the cat food bowl and would take a handful of the cat food. And see, because there is nobody overseeing the pet food industry, that particular food was found to have 2,000 parts per billion of penicillin in it, which would have not, you know, been allowed in the food chain, but of course they didn't care what goes in the animal foods. And she actually died, and it was in the American Journal of Cardiology, and I have that reference of that being the cause for that little human's death. And, you know, so many times when they're feeding the animals, I always ask, because how many times are these really red, disgusting ears? And I've gotten in trouble with that at work. They're like, why do you keep asking them what they're feeding? I said, because. And there was an article not too long ago in Veterinary Economics or something about the adverse food reactions. And I said, they have the ear flipped over. It's all red and inflamed. And they show them eating something that looks like Beneful because it's got red and green and yellow, you know, dyed foods. And I was like, the top allergic, the grains, the corn, the wheat, you know, what's in most of the American-produced diets for the animals, I said, they're very highly allergic, and they're making these ears produce all of this wax, which then becomes food for the yeast, which disturbs the whole flora in the ear, and the flora then becomes a mixed bag of bacteria and yeast. And I said, how many times are you going to go to the vet and spend money for them to swab the ear and give you cleaning agents, and you're going to keep cleaning, and you're going to get this infection cleared up, and it's going to come back because it's based on what you're feeding. And on top of the fact that they're getting, you know, antigenic stimulation out in the wazoo. And it's just like, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to make these connections. So
no,
they don't want to spend more money on their food, but they'll spend all the money at the vet's office for all of that.
Isn't it amazing? And all it takes is common sense. That's all it takes.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to ask you to tell us about one other thing that I'm so happy that you're doing. This Dr. Dumore group and the video that you're producing, can you tell the listeners a little bit about that project?
Yes, and I would encourage everybody who hasn't even had a chance to be exposed to alternative medicine, because this is certainly not the idea of a handful of veterinarians, and I'm certainly not the oldest one in the group or the youngest, but if you go to www.drdumore.com, that's D-R-M-O-R-E, drdumore.com, you can see an 18-minute video, which is just a reflection of over, I believe they have over 600 hours now. They're trying to put together a series that would actually occur on the public TV stations that would go over the different modalities that they have in alternative medicine. But what I really like about that 18-minute video, Simone from Para Productions in conjunction with Margot Roman from the Main Street Animal Hospital of Hopkinton, put that together. They started with our advanced meeting with Dr. Pitkins in Arizona with homeopathy, and then they got to go to China with Dr. Shea on the trip that they took. And anyway, it's just this last Monday, I even went up there to her office to they had interviewed a doctor, because this has gone international now, from Sri Lanka, and also one Sierra Leone. But what they are veterinarians who have realized and made these same connections that there's something very, very wrong with the dis-ease and the health state of animals. And what they pretty clearly attribute it to is the overuse of vaccinations, the overuse of pharmaceuticals, and the fact that they're no longer feeding them real foods. And I think it's a very good documentary. They are looking for funding to help make this happen on a large scale, and there's veterinarians all over the world that I have emailed that source to that have told me, you know, like Dr. Rogers in Ireland and a friend of mine who's in Israel, he's, you know, everybody who owns an animal needs to see that video. And it was done by Margot mainly because she was so infuriated. She was chastised by Tufts University for wanting to do alternative medicine on her horse that had contracted cancer. She got this horse at a later age in its life, but she kept him alive for 2.5 years with ozone therapy, and they actually told her she should be found guilty of animal abuse for doing that. And you see Champ in the video, as well as you'll see Simone's dog that died of cancer. And why did he get the cancer? Because he was vaccinated every single year until Simone was lucky enough to find a truly caring, holistic veterinarian who set her straight about, you know, health and disease.
And I'm sure the vaccine manufacturers and pharmaceutical companies aren't going to be very pleased about something of this great magnitude reaching public broadcasting. I doubt that they're making any contributions.
No, we do have a raw food company that's showing the video, but right now it's just it's a grassroots project, and they're continuing to build on the information is there, and Simone is certainly a very good, in her own right, documentarian. And so, you know, it's all there. I feel like this will come around, and we're right on the cusp of something very big, and it's not just warding off Codex. I think it has to do with people, like you said, finding that 100th monkey that will finally, that the majority will get it and understand that the real treasure, the real jewel and everything is not Western medicine, but in these other healing modalities, nutritional and also the use of, acupuncture and herbology and homeotoxicology.
Homeopathy.
Homeopathy. Homeopathy, yes. Should be first, right?
Yes,
but
definitely.
Anyway.
And of course, once we do reach critical mass, the professions that we both studied so many years thinking we were going to become healers, just imagine how they're going to look. I mean, the humiliation, I can't even imagine. They're going to have to hide under rocks to have turned their backs on this.
I think they're going to ignore it because, you know, I try to keep my pulse on as many of the different modalities, and I've gone in and gotten certification in things like the Reiki, vortex healing, and trying to a quantum touch. And what I'm really excited about right now is emotional freedom technique and how that can actually be used. Homeopathy, we always knew, a lot of times you can't clear the patient. You still have problems with the dog until you get that dog's person treated. And that gets into sort of a gray area because as veterinarians, we're supposed to be treating animals, and yet it's really, we're all the same. But what I have found out was if you go to the Quantum Touch and you read about how many healings that they've gotten with animals or in Reiki, and the woman who wrote Animal Reiki that I studied under, Kathleen Prasad, she says to me, I'm not, you know, there's nobody in my family that's a doctor, and I'm not a doctor. And I'm like going, you know what, this just proves my point that true healers are very rarely wearing white coats. You don't have to be a doctor to heal somebody. I said, if you have, like the client who ended up healing her dog of cancer and mainly through nutrition, there is nothing that's going to match the love and concern of that, the energy that is with a person that has a connection to that animal. Believe me, the person that's cattle calling the client through for that 15-second visit and that $180 cost for 7 vaccines does not have your animal's best interest in mind. They're not going to be the ones that you're going to be able to find healing from. It's going to be from probably that person that has quantum touch that's going to raise the vibration and energetically help to heal that animal. It's going to be that person that does animal Reiki. It's going to be that collection of your women friends that has a prayer circle. I mean, I just, the more I see the healings occur in those areas, the more I realize, you know, I wanted to go to school to become a veterinarian because I felt like that field needed a little more compassion in it. And when I went through it, I saw things that I didn't realize were going to be so significant until I had spent my 15 years doing Western medicine. But then when I saw, it'll be a lesson I'll never forget, but you don't get healings from conventional medicine. They can't possibly because they're energetically, they're not even approaching to treating anything except for that little physical part that they can see, and it's just not about that.
Well, amen. That's all I can say. I was so happy when I connected with yourself and Dr. Roman, and I know that together we're going to help to raise the consciousness to the critical mass that we need to stop this insanity. And I want to thank you so much, Dr. Patricia Monahan-Jordan, for being on the show tonight. And I'm hoping maybe sometime in the future you'll come back. Please do send me the list of books on nutrition, and I'll let our listeners know on a future show what those are. And thank you so much for all your good works. And I wish you were in my area. That's all I could say. I haven't been able to find a vet like you anywhere as near where I live. And there's such a need for vets like yourself. Is there, by any chance, a list, like, on the internet of veterinarians of holistic mindedness that people can access?
Yes, you can go to the AHVMA, which is the American Holistic Veterinary Medical Association. I believe that's a .org, but you can just push in search. And then within that group, they'll have a find a vet or find a practitioner, which you'll go to your state. Or if you, they also give you a list of modalities if you're looking specifically for a homeopath. There's also a listing of veterinary homeopaths that are certified or on their way through the American Veterinary, the Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy. So that's the AVH site. There's also, you can go for the www.tcvm.com. That will bring you to Dr. Shea's Qi Institute, and you can look up your state and then look up the veterinarian by the place they're located, and then they will also have certifications next to them on what they have as far as, like, if they're certified already in acupuncture and herbology and Twina. Twina is a type of soft tissue manipulation, a type of massage therapy that goes along with with acupuncture. And the I believe they even have a site now on the VBMA, which would be the Veterinary Botanical Medical Association. And again, you just put those letters in there and push search, and they'll come up to a find a practitioner site. And probably the American Holistic Veterinary Medical Association is the best one that sort of has everybody under their umbrella. So if there's something special like Reiki or Animal Reiki Sources, Kathleen Prasad's site, and then the AHVMA also will have like homotoxicology, chiropractic, the American Chiropractic Veterinary Association, ACVA list practitioners that have been through the certification degrees with them. And many of the veterinary chiropractics, they may be veterinarians or they may be chiropractics that went through the additional training for the animal courses. I'm pretty ashamed to say that typical of what I consider, you know, the good old boy system. In North Carolina, the North Carolina Veterinary Medical Association, a board, actually set up a sting operation against a local, she was in Wilmington, a human chiropractor who was very well trained, went through the Parker Institute, had her human practice, then went through the animal certification, and went through the American Chiropractic Veterinary Association certification. So she was like certified out the wazoo. They spent money, the Veterinary Medical Board at North Carolina, to set up a sting operation to try to trap her because she had the audacity of saying she was treating a dog for hip dysplasia. And I'm sitting there in my mind thinking, they have done more to cause hip dysplasia because that's a chronic form that has that's related to vaccinosis. And yet they're trying to put this woman out of business from taking time away from her practice from being able to do the one person who could affect healing for that dog. So, I mean, there you have it. That's what the state of the affair is with medicine.
Yes, it is, and my story is certainly further proof of that. So I want to thank you once again, Dr. Jordan. This is one of the best shows I've ever done. I am so grateful that I found you and to know that you're out there. And God bless you for caring so much about our beloved animals, and I encourage you to keep on keeping on.
And you too.
Okay. And I can't wait to meet you someday. So thank you very much, people, for listening. This show is going to be archived. Please tell all your friends with pets they must hear what Dr. Jordan had to say. Wake up, America. It's getting very late, but it's not too late to change things. Thank you and good night.
Night.